I should be joined live on the phone by Fiona Bardon. Fiona, good morning.
Good morning, George. How
good morning.
Are you?
Good to talk to you this morning. Not a bad morning either.
It's grand. I was actually just outside for a walk. It's nice and fresh.
Oh, wow. Wow. Because I haven't seen a window in the guts of an hour and a half.
And, oh, well, you're
so half of what I said there was wishful thinking. There yeah. you go. Fiona, can you take us back to 2019? What happened to you?
I can indeed, yeah. 2019, it was just, I suppose, a normal year for a 33-year-old. I was teaching and I had quite a difficult year. So I decided I was going to move to Dubai and teach there for a couple of years. And I managed to get a job. And just the week before I went, the school contacted me to say that they were having a bit of issues getting enough teachers and could they delay my contract by a week. So I said, yeah, that's no problem. And just in the middle of that week then, I ended up having a stroke. So I was very lucky that I wasn't on the plane or anything like that, because my doctor said I wouldn't have made it to Dubai, which was a bit of a shock. So there was no symptoms or signs or anything like pre the day that I had my stroke. I just woke up and I was feeling a bit sick, and I blamed it on the Chinese that I had the night before. But unfortunately, it wasn't food poisoning. I got up that morning and I just did a bit of laundry and went back to bed. And I was supposed to meet my friend for lunch, and I texted him just to cancel the lunch. But when I was texting him, my text wasn't making sense. But I didn't really think anything of it because I was just feeling so miserable. And I got up later on, and I had moved back in with my mum just for that week. And she came in the front door and she found me. I was just getting sick in the toilet. She asked, was everything okay? And I kind of was like, not really. And I put myself in the couch, and she did the great thing that all Irish mothers do and went and got some 7-Up for me. And she said she came home a while later, and she was in the kitchen, and she could hear a really kind of strange sound. So she came in to me, and she found me having a seizure on the floor. So that was the first sign that there was something majorly wrong, I suppose.
And what happened next, Fiona?
So what happened next was she called 999, and there was no ambulance available, so they sent the fire brigade, because obviously the firemen are firemen and women, I suppose, the paramedics. So they came to the house, and they weren't quite sure what it was. They kind of mentioned it could be a drug overdose. They mentioned it could be meningitis, and they brought me off to hospital. And I had a series of scans, and this is where my third bit of good luck, because my mum wasn't actually even supposed to be home that evening. My third bit of good luck, there was a doctor there that was the neurologist that was on call that night, Professor Harbison, and he had seen the stroke I had was quite rare. It was to do with a bleed in the brain in a place, a malformation that I have in my brain. And he had seen it 20 years ago, I think he had said to me, when he was working in England. So between himself and there was another consultant in Bowmont, they were checking my MRIs and my CT scans and stuff over the course of the next couple of days, and they managed to figure out what the problem was, and that I had a stroke. And I was in ICU for a few days, and then I was put down to high dependency. And then it was when I was deemed ready to go home, I was discharged back to my mum's house rather than being discharged to the National Rehab Hospital, where sometimes you're discharged into a nursing home or a different rehabilitation facility.
When you realised you had a stroke, how did you feel? What kind of emotions were building up inside you?
Well, I didn't actually realise I had a stroke, because I was told, but I suppose because they were using language I didn't really understand, I didn't know for about 6 or 8 weeks when I went back for one of my appointments that he used the word stroke. And I was like, oh, hang on a second. And to be honest, when he said that to me, I was like, oh, thank God, this actually makes so much sense. Because I didn't realise that a blood clot is a stroke. And I was like, oh, this is why I can't use my right hand, or this is why I'm finding it difficult to do X, Y, and Z. So to me, it was more of a relief. And I've never been one of these people who's like, oh, why did this happen to me? I'm kind of like, look, it's happened. There's no point in focusing negatively on it. I need to move on. Now, don't get me wrong and say, I've gone through an awful lot of counselling, and I've gotten a lot of support to get to that point anyway. But like, it is life-changing, but at the same time, you don't realise how life-changing it is, because your brain is kind of protecting you. I'd say if you knew everything at once, you wouldn't be able to cope, but you just kind of, so you get up and you go to have a shower. Like, I remember my first time having a shower at home, I stood in front of the shower and I didn't know how to turn it on. and I could be quite stubborn, so I didn't want to say to anybody that I didn't know how to turn it on. So I stood there for about 5 minutes trying to figure out what I needed to do. And it's those little things that until you go to do something new or to do something again, and then realise that you don't know what you're doing, you're like, okay, I'm in a little bit of trouble here.
Can you take us back to those first few days in recovery, Fiona? What kind of supports were available to you?
This is where I have a little bit of an issue. So people who are discharged home, there's very, very little support available for us. And this is something that the Irish Heart Foundation is working very hard on. So when I was discharged, I did get a referral to the National Rehabilitation Hospital as an outpatient. But this happened to me in August, and my first appointment with the National Rehabilitation Hospital wasn't until, I think it was March of the following year, which is 5 or 6 months later. And when you have a brain injury or a stroke, it's the first few months that are vital in where you're going to make the greatest recovery. And I missed out on those supports. So it's trying to get those supports early is difficult. And we all know that our health system, there's not enough support there for everybody. They're overworked, they're underpaid, there's just not enough people there. And they're obviously trying to prioritise the most vulnerable and the people most in need. So you're kind of ringing up and you're fighting for to look to see, can you get a speech and language therapist, or look, can you get a psychological assessment or a neuropsychological assessment for them to figure out what support you do need. But because you are so exhausted or you can't hold a proper conversation, it's very hard to be the advocate for yourself. And that's where I suppose it's really important for your family members to step in, or for places like the Irish Heart Foundation to come in and to give a hand. And there are supports out there from the Irish Heart Foundation and from Acquire Brain Injury Ireland and Headway, but it's just trying to know that those supports are available and where you need to go for them is the issue, because they were more concerned about the fact that I was having a seizure and to try and stop that happening again rather than trying to get me into the supports. So it was just a little bit of miscommunication, I suppose.
Do you ever find out why it happened to you? Is there any history of stroke in your family?
No, there's I think, say my granddad or my great-granddad, but they said that was kind of too far away for it to happen. And he did say to me that there was a malformation in my brain, and he said, look, there's a malformation in everybody, and just yours happened to present itself. So I was not very lucky in that regard. But then, because it happened so suddenly, I said, what's going to happen if it happens again? And he said, if it happens again, because you didn't know it happening the first time, you're not going to know it happened the second time. He was like, go off and live your life, and if it happens the second time, we'll deal with it again then. But he said, from what he thinks, he doesn't think it's going to. So I don't really think that it's very, it's not worth focusing on the what if it happens again, because that's not the way to live the life, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, this didn't just affect you. I would presume that, you know, the shock of your family and friends must have been something else. Can you tell us about how it affected their lives as well?
Yeah, my mom, obviously, she had to bring me, she didn't have to bring me home, she chose to bring me home and look after me. And I think the problem is, you're coming home. We had no idea that it was a stroke. We didn't know what we were dealing with. We didn't kind of realize that there was going to be long-term effects. It was kind of, you're going home, have a rest for a few weeks, and you'll be grand. But realistically, I wasn't able to do a lot of tasks independently. I'd be so fatigued. My mood changed. I was quite angry. I was short-tempered. And it's an awful lot for kind of one person to deal with. So I have two sisters, Elaine and Kira, and I have two nephews now, Bodie and Taryn and Gary, my brother-in-law. They were very good, and they came, and they were kind of, if mum was going out to do the food shop, my Aunt Nora might just happen to drop in, or someone else might be happening to be in the area and drop in for a cup of tea. So you're not left alone. And that's very difficult, because you realise over time, Jesus, I've not been in the house alone by myself for 4 weeks, and then you realise there's a reason that you're not being left alone. And I suppose they need support, because it's a massive life-altering incident for them as well. I was 33 when it happened. There was no one else living at home with my mum, and then suddenly I had to move back in with her for the year. So her life change massively. And I suppose it's not really when you're growing up, or when my sister's growing up and they're thinking about me, they're not thinking about me nearly dying and having to reestablish my life. They're thinking about me going off and getting married, or going traveling, or moving abroad. So there's all those kind of life altering incidences, I suppose, that it's not the path that they thought I would have in my life, or that I thought I would have in my life. So it's very hard emotionally on them, and they're worried, and they're kind of trying to put their best foot forward as well.
How do you relearn, Fiona? Is this a natural process that the brain does itself, or do you literally have to relearn to do things?
It's a bit of both. So when you're learning things initially, you learn things, and say if you learn how to drive, you have to purposely learn how to put the car into first gear, into second gear, put the clutch in, find the bike, start going, put down the handbrake. And then once you keep learning and practicing, that goes from purposely learning something into your automatic learning. So that now that you would just start, when you turn on the engine, you kind of don't really think about it, you just start moving and that's it. So when you relearn stuff, it's again, you're purposely learning something. Like you might say, if you can't remember how to make a cup of tea, someone would have to sit down with you, and you might write, if you're able to read and write, you might write out the steps involved, or you might have a picture up on the press to say you need to take out the cup, you need to put water in the kettle, you need to boil the kettle, you need to take the tea bag, you need to pour the boiling water in, you need to strain the teacup, and then you need to put in milk or sugar or whatever it is that you have in your tea. And by practicing and doing it over time and time again, it becomes automatic. These things, it goes from that being a 30-second job to that maybe being a 5 or 10-minute job, and that's only making a cup of tea. So there's an awful lot of things that you need to relearn. And I kind of feel that sometimes when you relearn it, it's okay, but there's some things that you might not be able to. And they do say in rehab, it's kind of like if you had a filing cabinet and it's full of, say, your insurance documents is in one file, and your car insurance is another file, and your electricity bills in one file, and your gas bills in one file, and your mortgage is in one file. It's like someone has gone into that filing cabinet, they've taken every single page out of each file, and they've just dumped it on the floor. And it's your brain's job then to try and go in and sort it out. Because depending on where your brain was affected, that's where you might have an issue with, like, you might have an issue with cognition, you might have an issue with finding your words, you might have an issue with understanding words or understanding meanings of words, or it could be that you have an issue with memory, or you could have an issue with, so that's all like cognitive, but you could have an issue with emotional needs, or then there's also people who have been physically affected. Or there could be people who have had their senses, like they mightn't be able to taste or smell or see or hear properly. So it just depends. Every brain injury is different, I suppose, and every recovery is different. So it depends on what part of your brain was affected, and how to kind of rehabilitate that part of your brain, or your brain needs to kind of find a new way to reroute the blood and the neurons around to be able to figure out how to redo something or relearn something.
Yeah. How are you now, Fiona? And are you looking now at going back to work maybe at some time in the foreseeable future?
So it's now 3 years since I was working. So part of my issue is that I find reading very difficult, and I find retaining information difficult, especially if you're tired.
Yeah.
And then if I'm usually a teacher. Teaching obviously involves an awful lot of having to make decisions, having to be on the ball all the time, remembering as a child out to the toilet, or remembering as someone coming in to, say, help with English or maths or whichever it is. So I definitely want to get back to teaching. I definitely want to get back to work. But then the problem is, am I able for it? Am I capable of it? And I suppose it's different because when I'm a primary school teacher, when you're a primary school teacher, just the way the sick days fall, you have to work full days. And the Department of Education aren't kind of being very compromising about allowing me to get back to half days. So it looks at for the moment that I can't get back to work, but it's definitely something that I'm working on. And I suppose that's why I attend things like Headway, and I get support from the Irish Heart Foundation to build up and to do courses and was able to build up my stamina and my memory and my concentration and my speech and things like that to hopefully get back to a working life. And then you kind of have to go, well, maybe I won't be able to do teaching anymore, and if I can't, what else is there out there for me?
I mentioned earlier that the Irish Heart Foundation, who you've just mentioned, Fiona, are involved in coordinating a series of talks. And it's these talks are centred around offering supports for those who need help with the after effects of stroke. These talks, I believe, take place later on this month. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, so there's a series of talks running that the Irish Heart Foundation are doing. So they're running both on Zoom, and they have a Facebook page. It's called Life After Stroke Irish Heart Foundation. So some of the talks are on Zoom and some of the talks are on the Facebook page. And these are different talks. They start next Monday, the 24th of October. And the talks are generally an hour or an hour and a half long, which is good because obviously you get quite fatigued after a certain length of time. You can't concentrate for too long. But there's different talks for everybody out there. So on the Monday, there's a talk at 9 a.m. just about the stroke support services. I just actually want to talk about that in a couple of minutes and the kind of support that they provide. And then their second talk is about managing your fatigue. And on Tuesday, there's talks about when you're discharged from hospital and how to get back into a routine at home, getting sleep, getting the right supports. And then mindfulness talk is being run by a lady called Erica Balfour. And then on Wednesday, there's a talk about preventing another stroke. And then myself and a gentleman called Gavin Rushford and a lady called Yvonne Oldman are doing stroke survivor stories. So we would go in and we would tell our story and what kind of things we've done to help ourselves and to get back. And I think that's really important for people who are coming behind us on their journey, to kind of give them a bit of hope and to know there's peer support there, and to know that we've been through it and that we understand how they're feeling. And then on Thursday, there's a talk about healthy eating run by Orna O'Brien. She's a dietitian for the Irish Heart Foundation. And on Thursday afternoon, there's a talk by a lady called Fionnuala Trench on medicines and stroke. So things like, say, my anti-seizure tablets, I'm not allowed to take antihistamines with them. So it's little things like that how your medicines might affect other medication, or that your medicines might affect sleep, or when might be the best time to take medicines, things like that. And then on Friday, finally, there's a talk about grants and entitlements, because obviously when you've had a stroke, you can't work, so there's an awful lot of financial implications. So it's great to have somebody coming in to be able to tell you where you need to go to for your entitlements. And then on the Friday as well, the Irish Heart Foundation are running a talk on the FAST signs, like when a stroke strike acts fast. So you have to look out for the face, the drooping in the face, if you can lift both your arms, if your speech has been affected. And then if there's an issue with these, then it's kind of time to ring 999. And just as an aside there, because I'm part of the Younger Stroke Network, there's a good few of us that didn't have those FAST symptoms. A lot of us had issues with our balance. We weren't able to see properly. We might have had headaches. We were getting sick or having seizures. So the FAST acronym works for an awful lot of people, but it's not the only sign of stroke.
How can people get involved, Fiona? How can people register?
So to register, the Irish Heart Foundation's website is irishheart.ie. So if you register, you can go on to irishheart.ie, and I think it's in the news section. It tells you then, it has a little blurb about what's happening in each talk and how to register for each talk. And then some of the other talks are being run from the Irish Heart Foundation's Facebook page, which is called Life After Stroke Irish Heart Foundation.
How important are talks like these, Fiona, in your recovery? How can they help you?
They're amazing, to be honest. There's things that you don't know until you listen to them. So things like to know that this is where I need to go to find out where my entitlements are, or say to know that feeling this tired is not normal, or I have an issue with my dexterity, how do I fix it, or is this food okay for me to eat? Should I be eating low fat diet? Should I be eating a high fat diet? Because some patients who have had a stroke, some stroke survivors, it's to do with their heart, and some stroke survivors, it's to do with their brain. So going to these talks and attending these talks are very important, because it just gives information about the recovery, it gives information about preventing a second stroke, and it also gives information, I should have said this earlier, to not just stroke survivors, but to also their carers and to their families. And I suppose that's where I need to cut in as well and say, the Irish Heart Foundation has provided, they have a huge amount of support available for stroke survivors and their families and their carers on how to kind of live your best life after stroke. They do one-off talks throughout the year, like once a month. There's exercise classes that we can attend online and in person. They run courses on things like fatigue or like managing your finances, or I feel like I'm repeating myself here. There's peer support, and to me the peer support is really important, because as empathetic as my family and friends are, it's talking to someone else who has a stroke. You don't feel the need to have to explain it. You walk into the room and they know exactly how you feel, and you can say, oh, I'm finding it difficult today because I'm tired, or someone in our group last day was like, oh, I'm having pins and needles. Is this normal or is this not normal? And by talking to somebody else who has gone through it, they're like, yes, this has happened to me and this is how I deal with it. There's a huge amount of volunteers that come forward and they do phone support for us. There's a nurse helpline that if you had an issue, or if you were kind of wondering, is this enough for me to go to the doctor with, you phone the nurse support helpline. And then things like, if I was waiting to get into a headway and I couldn't get in there, they're running courses like art therapy, they're running cognition courses, they've done mindfulness courses. There's so many courses that they're running to try and help us kind of get back up on our feet to not to pass the week, but like their support, that you have an hour and a half on a Friday that you might be doing an art therapy course, that you might be doing a mindfulness course, or how to deal with stress in your life. It's all these are building yourself back up for, I suppose, a new normal and a life post-stroke.
What next, Fiona?
What next is right. I have gotten into Headway, so that was a big achievement for me. So Headway is another charity that provides support. So I'll be getting cognitive support from them, and then hopefully I'll get back into a vocational therapy course. Actually, I did one with Irish Heart Foundation as well, but I just wasn't ready to get back to work. And I am hoping that in the long term I'll be able to get back to work, whether it's in teaching or whether it's something else. I'm not really sure. It's kind of just, I have to wait and see how the recovery keeps going. And I suppose it's interesting, like, you kind of feel sometimes when people don't fully realize that having a stroke, it's a brain injury and the brain takes a good while to heal, that you mightn't get back to work in 6 months. It might take up to a few years, but as long as you kind of have hope and you keep striving to get there, it's important.
Well, Fiona, thank you so much for taking time out this morning to tell us about your story. And I just feel as if we've just kind of touched the tip of the iceberg here this morning, and we must talk again about
absolutely.
Your experiences and the value of networking, talking to people who've been through this.
They
understand, you know, where others might not. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Fiona, and I wish you well, but hopefully we will speak again soon, because there is a lot more, I think, to talk about with this. And again, thank you so much for taking time out this morning. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you, Joe.
So
IrishHeart.ie for anybody who wants to attend the talks next week.
That's it. The very
thank
one.
You so much.
Fiona, thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And I was joined there by Fiona Barden.